And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Get it into Boozer, back for Shar. Ahead, Boozer, that ball deflected and stolen by Mullins. Caravan, 2 seconds. Mullins tosses it up.
Welcome to the Sports Kings from Queens, where all the sports talkers royal, real, and straight from the boroughs. Today is Wednesday, April 1st. This is episode 226. That's right, it's not April Fool's Day. It is episode 226 for real. I'm Gino, joined by Kevin and Darren. Please catch us over at your podcast. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like. Share our pages, please. NCAA down to the Final Four. Baseball underway. Season not even a week old yet, just about a week. NHL, NBA in the closing games. Another week, week and a half left of the season. We're going to get it going. We're going to start off with the NCAA tournament. Last week we were here, we were at 16. We're now down to 4. Darren, let's get it started.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we go into the Sweet 16, and you know what? We actually had a couple of pretty good games on Thursday night. We had a Purdue hold off Texas. Kaufman Wren had a little tip in inside of 1 second left to beat Texas by 2. Illinois winning at Houston, basically, not in Houston's home court, but they won by 10. Seemed kind of comfortable, G.
I was surprised how they were able to shut down that offense, I will tell you.
Yeah, it was probably Houston's worst offensive performance of the season. It's a team that's actually stepped up offensively over the past couple of years. Illinois just looked like the better team all night, Kev. I mean, I was waiting for Houston's run. I think we all picked Houston to go into our Final Four, and Houston didn't show up for any of us.
Yeah, it was like you said, Aaron, I think we were all waiting for Houston to make a run. You know, we know Houston can go through their little offensive slumps here and there. And we weren't shocked that they had trouble scoring for a little while. I know they're better. You said they're a better offensive team than last year or the last few years, but they are still suspect with these little droughts. But they never really made that run. They got it to, what, 9 at one point, I think, was about the closest. I mean, Illinois kept
points.
Kev, they never found the rhythm. The whole, like we were waiting, I think we were all waiting for them to find the rhythm, and all of a sudden it's a 10-0 spurt, and, you know, here we go, and they never found it the whole game. It was like, this is not the Houston team we saw all year, but Illinois really played well, I'll tell you that.
Illinois made a decision early on to let Sanak shoot, the freshman shoot, and the big, and he missed everything except for one shot. But they were leaving him open 15, 18 feet away. And Sanak, who's had games where he scored in the 20s all season, could not put one home. Uzan was not a contributor in this game. Fleming struggled. He scored his points, but he struggled. Same with Sharp. Tugler got fouls early, but he still played really hard. It just, Houston's defense did more against Illinois than most teams will do. But their offense, when they score 55, you're not going to win much. I don't care how good your defense is. That's where we stood there. Then we had Iowa outlasting Nebraska. And despite the 4 on the court on that big play late, Iowa just hit shots down the stretch in Nebraska didn't, guys. I mean, it was pretty simple with that.
Yeah.
Tate Sage was excellent. Every time there was a big shot, I felt like he got the ball and just hit the basket with no problem.
This kid's a freshman. You want to see a kid that's going to be a star in 2 years? Like, yeah. He'll be good next year, and as a junior, he'll be one of the leading scorers in the country.
Yeah.
Because he had the stones to put up the points he did in that game. I thought it was really impressive. And then the nightcap, we were all looking forward to it, but Arkansas just couldn't keep up with Arizona.
No.
And you know, no. Acuff did all he could, but he didn't get the support that night from the others. And to be honest with you, Arizona just has way too many weapons, and it pretty much showed. Then we go to Friday, right? And Tennessee is the 6, controlled Iowa State. Iowa State was really not a factor without Jefferson being able to play. Tennessee's big and physical, and just kind of did what they had to do to them. Michigan took it to Alabama. Alabama jumped out early, but then Michigan just kind of was, much like Arizona, just superior.
Yep.
Then we had a really good game with UConn and Michigan State, where Michigan State closed that gap a lot, but could not get over the top. UConn was able to do enough down the stretch to win it. For me, Michigan State had a couple of plays where the wrong guy's taking the big shot for me, and I would have liked to have seen, you know, I would like to see a little bit of ball movement, a little bit, you know, a little bit more called in plays here where we're trying to do something. It seemed like they settled for a lot of threes, and it seemed like they settled for a lot of threes that were somewhat contested, Kev.
You know, they were down so big early and cut into the deficit by halftime. And this whole second half, they were chasing UConn. They never were able to catch up and get into that lead. UConn kept making big shot after big shot and doing what they had to do to pull out a win.
Yep. Listen, they hit a few foul shots down the stretch. They did what they had to do. Reed was a beast down there. And then, of course, the game that had us all gripped, we had Duke hold off St. John's 80-75. Listen, we could sit there and talk about the foul shots. They were 24-8. But Duke, they control the boards. Gee, why don't we start with you? You've been on St. John's all year. Why don't you tell me any thoughts on this game in particular?
I think the erratic guard play for St. John's finally caught up to them. None of those guards could actually had a really good game enough that they could hit those shots when they needed to. You know, Darling wasn't great, and Sanaa wasn't great, and Jackson, no matter who they went to, I felt like it was just a crapshoot if they were going to score that night. Listen, Duke played good defense, but the erratic guard play was an issue early in the season for St. John's, and it seemed like once they started the Big East part of their schedule, they started to click a little bit, but you know what? It finally caught up to them. Kev?
I think the issue for St. John's was Zubi, and we've said it a few times already. Sometimes when you play against a bigger guy, he doesn't shoot well enough to overcome playing against the bigs, and 6 for 17 is just not good enough. I mean, I'm not putting this blame on him.
He played hard and played well.
The problem for St. John's was, Evans having a terrific game. He had 25.
He didn't miss a shot.
Foster, especially in the second half, came up with, it felt like play after play. And 11 points, you go, look at 11 points, but boy, that was unexpected coming back from the broken foot that quickly. And I think Foster was the reason why Duke actually won that game.
Yeah, I had some questions with Patino. I thought Prey playing only 14 minutes. The kid was 4 for 4 from three. He was making deflections defensively. He seemed like he was all over the court. I was surprised at that. And to your point, Gino, Sanaa was 0 for 4, okay? Sellers was 2 for 9.
Sellers, that was the other guy.
Jackson was 2 for 8. And Hopkins only took 7 shots.
Yeah.
He took less shots than Sellers and Jackson. He was 6 for 7. Now, I know he had the phantom second foul call, which was a joke, by the way. It was a horrible call. But at the same time, down the stretch of the game, he's the guy hitting. They have to find a way to get the ball in his hands. And I got to put it on Patino. I don't know who else to put it on. A, the Prey thing. And B, Hopkins is the guy. And maybe he's not vocal enough to call for the ball. But he's your best weapon. You have to find a way to get him the ball. Darling's shot was about as off as any shot I've ever seen from the top of the key to end the game. He missed it by like 3 feet wide. I don't even know what that was. That was just awful. And I know he won the game prior. I'm not trying to kill Darling. It's just not his game. But somehow, some way, and they don't foul. Duke doesn't foul. Let Darling shoot it. Got a better chance of Zubi getting an offensive rebound than Darling hitting the shot. They had to find a way to get that ball to Hopkins in the last couple of possessions. They did it once, and he hit a layup, but they needed to get the ball in his hands more. Listen, good season for St. John's. They gave us everything they wanted. They played the way we like, guys. They played gritty. They played hard. They were defensive. They were scrappy. Mitchell was making steals all on his own. The other thing, and I know, G, you had your hand up. Just 1 second. Not once on that press did they trap. Not once. They would get the pass in the corner. You figure, okay, they're saving it for later. Not once did they send the second guy over there to see how they react. And now watching the game after, which we'll get into a little after, maybe trapping Caden Boozer wasn't a bad idea. But we'll get into that a little later. Gee, I know you had a point. I'm sorry.
Well, no, exactly when we talked about this last week, and I told you the three things that had to happen, and we've mentioned them all. You know, we thought Zubi had to have the good game. He really didn't have a great game.
He had 17, but it wasn't a great 17.
We thought Bryce Hopkins, he had to put up more than his average of 14, and he had to score when they needed him to. That didn't happen.
He scored 15, but he didn't score when they needed him to.
And then the third one was, give me one of the guards to have a big game. And the two I mentioned were Ian Jackson and Dylan Darling. And Not one of those things happened.
Nope.
Now, in spite of that, it was a hell of a game. They were in it to the end. You know, we were all on the edge of our seat as it came down the stretch. But at the end of the day, Duke was just a little bit better, and St. John's goes home.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Pitino re-upped, restructured contract through 2030. I don't think there's any St. John's fan that's upset about that, despite my critiques tonight. Happy to see Pitino still on the sideline and make St. John's relevant, which is fun for us. Again, we love this tournament. This is our thing, right? I mean, yep. We've been doing this for 30 years. We have fun with it. We like watching the games. We'd watch them wherever we were. So why not just watch them together and have a good time? And, you know, when St. John's is relevant, it's so much more fun for us. And that's what they did for us, which is great. Now we just love to see them get over the last year's second round, this year's Sweet 16. Next year, maybe we can skip the Elite Eight and go right to the four. Let's see what happens, G.
Well, listen, with Pitino resigning, right, restructuring, yep, however you want to put it, you know he will come back now and he will have this team raring to go again. This is the second straight year last year that they made the tournament. They won the Big East tournament. So, you know, hopefully he sees what he didn't have this year, gets it before the season starts, and we have another really good run, at least to the eight. Can we go one step further from the 16 to the eight?
I want
at least
two steps further. I want to get to the four, man.
You want to get to the four? I'd like the four. I'll tell you right now.
We haven't seen St. John's in the four in a long time. Then there were two more days of basketball, even though we were a little deflated. And you know what? The basketball was a little deflated. Illinois, Iowa got off to a pretty good start, but just Illinois just had too much firepower. Sturts had to basically do it all by himself early on. Fulgaris was a non-factor. Tate still played well. Koch was okay, but I mean, this wasn't enough firepower. Iowa, once Illinois starts scoring, Iowa has to score in every possession. They play too slow to do it any other way. Great season for Iowa, but that was that. Then we had an interesting run. Arizona trailed by 7 at the half against Purdue. Passed them at the 15:52 mark and never looked back, Kev. They were just far better than Purdue. Purdue did everything they could, but
impressive first half of Purdue. And then Arizona just proved that, you know, Darren, you said before the tournament started you liked Arizona. You thought they were the best team, and Purdue just didn't have enough to match them. Unfortunately, that was one of the games I liked both teams.
Yeah, no.
As opposed to one on Sunday where I hate watch that game, this one I actually like both teams. I like Painter. He's a terrific coach. Seems like a terrific guy. And Arizona was just too much.
Arizona was a 9.5-point favorite to start that game. I had them. And then at the half, they were only -1.5, and I was lucky enough to get a second bet in and hit the little double on Arizona because they wound up coming out and playing a really good second half. Darren?
Yeah, then we went to Sunday where Michigan just dominated Tennessee. It wasn't much of a game. It was like close early, 14-12, and then Michigan just went on a run and it was over. The other team that's complete to me is Michigan, and unfortunately they'll meet each other in the four rather than a chance at the title. But they also are both coming off a week straight, so they're of being off, so they have the ability to everybody's fresh for that game. So we'll see the best, hopefully, of both teams.
Yep.
I can't stand Michigan. There's nothing about this team I find remotely exciting. I don't like Lindenborg. I think he's a punk. I don't like May. I think he's a douche. I don't like Cadeau. I think he's a flopper. There's nothing about this team I find remotely enjoyable to watch. But they're really freaking good. So it doesn't matter if I enjoy them or not. They're a really good basketball team, Kevin.
I don't know, Darren. I thought you were a little stronger on Lindenborg when our text.
He's a G League player. If I ever go to a game where I see him, I'm just going to yell G League.
Don't hold back. Please tell us how you feel, Darren.
You know what? You're up 20. There's a little skirmish. You got to sit there and point at the scoreboard. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah.
This kid's a jerk every time they put the mic on him. And then they talk about him. Oh, he embraces the role as villain. You're a college player. No one needs to be a villain. Grayson Allen was a douche. No one liked him. He was a villain. No one likes assholes. Nobody does. And this kid's
Christian
an Leitner. Asshole. Sorry.
Christian Leitner.
Learn how to win. At some point, you're not 18, you're 23. You've been in college for 17 years. Learn how to freaking win a game, you know, and not act like a jerk when you're doing it. I don't like that. The fact that May has no control over him gives me no respect for May. But say what you want, this team is really good. Dominated a good Tennessee team. They couldn't hit shots, but it had nothing to do with that. They, even if they were hitting shots, they would have lost by 15. I don't think this game was ever going to be close, Kev.
No. It was, like you said, Michigan, I mean, with Landenborg, with Mara and Johnson up front and Cadeau, they're all just playing real well also during this tournament. And again, a complete team beat Tennessee.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, Tennessee, actually the guy with the most upside on the court is Ament. He'll be a lottery pick. But, you know, he's skinny, and they bullied him, and you saw it there. And then we had the game of the weekend, maybe the game of the tournament, guys. I mean,
yeah. I would think so.
I'm not arguing because of the magnitude of the game that this wasn't the game of the tournament. Now, opposite of what happened with Michigan State, Duke led by 19 on UConn in this one in the first half. And UConn, you know, I'm sitting there watching the game and I'm like, you know, and I'm rooting for UConn, which, you know, can't believe I'm doing it, but here I am. And I'm like, just get it to 10. Okay. If you can get it to 6 at the 5-minute mark, you know, you got to, you know, I'm just trying to give myself little points of emphasis that if they can get to a certain point level, they have a shot. And they kept doing it. They kept getting there. They couldn't get over the top. And then I don't know what else to describe it, guys, but we had a finish of finishes. Duke leads by 6 with 1:14 to go. And they don't win the game in regulation, Kev. I mean,
what? you're not used to Duke doing this.
No.
And, you know, missed a couple of shots. UConn made every big shot. Caravan, even the play before, hit the huge three.
And he had an awful game. And he hit that shot. He was not hitting anything. Not an awful game, an awful offensive game.
Yeah. What's his name? Reed was big again.
Yeah.
Reed was terrific. And, you know, all of a sudden they were able to get the turnover on Caden Boozer.
Yeah.
And got it to Mullins, and, man, that was pure.
35 feet away, G. Yeah. Pure as the driven snow. And the thing is that all Boozer has to do is stand there and get fouled.
That's all he's got to do.
All he's got to do is stand there and get fouled. Instead, he tries to throw it over again. What I hate about this, honestly, and I'm not a Duke fan, you guys know this, is that I hate it when somebody loses the game more than somebody wins it. I'd rather a great shot where I don't have some 18-year-old or 19-year-old kid that's the GOAT, because that I'm not the GOAT. That's the you can call it the GOAT too, both ways, actually. But he's the reason why they lost. His turnover cost his team the game. And it doesn't really, at the end of the game it does, but there's a million microcosms that make the game turn out the way it did. But you hate to have a kid like that because, I mean, listen, we're old enough to remember Donnie Moore, never recovering from giving up a big home. And you just hope nothing like that happens to this kid, which you hope he does. And I'm not trying to insinuate that I know anything like it would. But you don't like to see a kid lose the game. You'd rather see a kid just win the game, a big shot. Missing a foul shot's one thing, but making a bonehead turnover when all you have to do is stand there and get held, tough, Kev.
Bonehead play, but like you said, it didn't. Yes, that was the last play, but Duke led by 19.
Yeah.
Duke does not blow 19-point leads, do they?
No.
And guess what? They blew a 19-point lead. I felt like the second half, the whistle, may have actually favored UConn a little bit for a change.
Well, UConn does okay with it. UConn doesn't do bad with the whistle either.
But. And I tell you, you know, like I said, I was joking around saying I was hate watching the game because I hate both teams. And most of the game, I kept finding myself rooting a little bit more and more for UConn the whole game.
Yeah,
I just see that Duke on the jersey and watching these kids come back and fight hard to come back. And that shot, you know, I was with a couple of friends and we all were just, oh, we couldn't believe it.
So here's the question. If UConn was up 19 and Duke was coming back, you think you might have had the same feeling that way?
Probably not.
I don't know. I don't know if I would have rooted for it because we had three not so good games. I don't know if I would have been rooting for a game or not. I was thinking to myself the same type of thing though, Kev. It was like I was rooting for UConn, and I listen, under Calhoun, I like UConn.
Yeah.
Under Hurley, I do not.
Yep.
He's a whiny pain in my ass too. I'm not a fan of him at all. But
I mean, I don't know what that was after the game with 4 tenths left with after the shot with the referee.
With Ayers?
Going nose to nose or head to head with the referee.
Yeah, who can't ref in the Final Four because of it. Yeah. Ayers.
You've got that, and then you've got on the other side the Duke radio announcers. Oh, they came off the bench. That should have been a tee.
Yeah, stop crying. Okay,
stop crying. Duke,
they came off the bench.
With that shot, everybody should have been off the bench.
35-footer. The kid only hit one big shot the whole game. Everybody was missing shots. They started off, what, 1-for-18 from three in that game? And this kid buried it like it was a layup.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're going to see Mullins be a thorn in everybody's side for another couple of years. That's what that comes down to, because the confidence is there. Reminds me of Harold Jensen when he was a freshman hitting shots for Nova. You know, just like one of those guys that's going to hit a big shot. But so that, there we are. Those that went out to the Final Four, and we get Michigan, who's a point-and-a-half favorite over Arizona, Illinois, point-and-a-half favorite over UConn, last I saw. G, correct me if I'm wrong.
Correct.
Correct. Guys? G, who do you like in that Michigan-Arizona game? It's a great
game. What? This should be a great game, really.
If it's not, there's something wrong.
I mean – I think you can make cases for both teams in this one. And I think that's rare when you get down to this point. You know, these are probably the best two teams in the tournament, the way they've played. So, you know, if you told me one beat the other, I wouldn't be surprised. I think you guys were right at the start of this, and I think it's Arizona. I do think it's Arizona. I know you both picked Arizona. I think there's something there. I think Arizona winds up winning this game. I like Arizona plus the point and a half. That's, you know, you can get Arizona plus 105 on the money line if you like that. You know, over under is 157 and a half, Darren. So, you know, they think it's going to be, you know, in the mid-70s, which it's probably going to be in the mid-70s, to be honest.
Arizona does it without threes.
Michigan's
efficient on offense. It's a really interesting microcosm of how the two teams play.
My pick's going to be Arizona.
Okay. Sorry about that. G, Kev?
No, it's okay.
Yeah, like you said, Arizona, 363rd out of 365 teams and three-point rate in the Division I basketball.
They just don't shoot.
They do not shoot the three. And yet, you know, they put up 100 points against weaker competition. But they can put up 100, taking, you know, scoring 10 from or 9 from the three-point line. Top talent in both teams. You know, Bradley was Big 12 Player of the Year. Landenborg, terrific for the Michigan. I think with Krivas, Burries, and Pete, I think that's just a little bit better than Michigan's other players. You know, not taking anything away from Mara and Johnson and Cadeau, but I think Arizona just has that little extra there. They're first in adjusted defensive efficiency. I think Arizona does enough to slow down Michigan enough and pull out a win. You know, that 80 to 75 type of range.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Obviously, if I picked Arizona to win it all, I'm not going to shy away at this point. Yeah. Same as you, Kev.
Yeah.
This is going to be – you hope both teams are in it and we get a really, really good game where everybody's hitting shots. I honestly think that, you know, that Michigan's three will neutralize the game. I think Arizona, like you said, Kev, I like their depth a little bit more. They actually have the size to play with Lara. They just a bit. I mean, he's still taller. He's 7'3" to 7'1" in Krivas, but it's closer, and they can throw waves at you. Arizona's a little younger, but at the same time, you got that 5th-year senior with the ball in his hands the whole time, or the grad senior, whatever you want to call him. I'm going to take Arizona, much like you, but probably a little more high scoring than you have it. I'm going to go more like 85-82, but I think that they're going to find a way to win a one-possession game.
Yep.
And then we get the other one, which is another great game, by the way.
Yeah.
You get Illinois, who's been as good as anybody in this tournament, guys, laying a point and a half against UConn, who just had the most miraculous comeback you possibly can against one of the most storied programs in the history of the sport. Illinois is a 1.5-point favorite. We'll start with you this time, Kev. Where are you going in this one? Who you like?
You know, I don't think UConn is as deep as the other teams. I think that's what's going to be the difference here. You know, Reed's been awesome this tournament. Caravan is probably the one left over from the back-to-back champions.
Mm-hmm.
Mullins had his moment. But I think when you look in Illinois, when you've got, you know, Keaton Wagler, Stojakovic, who I think is probably a better all-around player than his dad, Peja.
Well, he can't shoot like his father, but he can drive like a mother.
Peja can shoot the ball better, but I think Andre might be better all-around. But, you know, inside, when you're dealing with guys like Reed, you know, they've got Ivicic, who's 7'1", and Mirkovic, who's 6'9", and can go outside too and shoot from three. Illinois's got to protect the rim. I think they can pressure the ball on defense and turn UConn over a little bit. I think Illinois wins this one a little bit more comfortably by about 8 points.
Gee, where you going?
I think UConn played their game last week. I think Hurley is going to have to struggle to get them to get to that level one more time. I think Illinois is going to shoot just a little bit better. I'm with Kev. I'm taking Illinois. You know, maybe it's 4 points, 5 points. I mean, I don't think UConn's getting blown out, but I think UConn, the bubble that didn't burst for them last week bursts now. Darren?
For me, it's a little here's the thing. Ivicic has a twin brother who's also 7'1". There's a lot of fouls that they could give up on Reed down there. Mm-hmm. I think Mirkovic is the key to this game. If Mirkovic can kind of get things going, he's such a mismatch problem. And if he can match Caravan, because the thing about it is that outside of Mullen's big shot, the guards have not played well for UConn. Ball has not been able to hit shots. I mean, and he's the guy that you expect. Unless somebody comes out of nowhere and starts hitting shots on UConn, I don't know if they're going to get the guard play that can compete with what Illinois brings every night. And I think Illinois just has a little too much. I'm leaning where Kev is. I think that Illinois kind of pulls this one away, maybe wins by 8 to 10 points, but I think it's a closer game at the half. I think it's like 2-3 points, and then Illinois just kind of wears them down just because of the extra depth. And I think we're looking at an Illinois-Arizona final, guys.
Jake? So Michigan-UConn is the play, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd bet Michigan-UConn if I was listening, because we three idiots picked the other two, so here we are. And well, national champion, do you think Arizona cuts down the nets, or you think Illinois has a shot?
Illinois has a shot, but unlike you, Darren, I picked Arizona at the beginning. I'm not going to change. I think Arizona is a more complete team, even though Illinois is pretty close. But I think Arizona wins on Monday night.
Jake?
I think it's Arizona. I think the winner of Arizona-Michigan winds up cutting down the nets Monday night. I think out of the four teams that are left, they're clearly the better two. And I think you guys were on the money with this one. I think it's Arizona.
Obviously, I'm going to stick with it same way. The team I like the most is Illinois out of these four. I hope that they're able to make a run, but I think Arizona is the best team. And that's where we are in college basketball, guys. Another tournament, another season winding down. Three games left. We started with 67, 64 done, three to go. And then, you know, then we get into the other spring and summer sports.
Yep.
Gene, back to you, my friend.
So – odds to win the tournament at this point, Arizona and Michigan are both plus 175. Illinois at plus 400, UConn at plus 590. So if you do like Illinois or UConn, now's a good time to bet them at plus 400 and plus 590. So
makes sense.
All right, we'll head over to a little baseball now. So season began last week. We talked a little Yankees and Mets last week. Kev, you want to just touch on the Mets after a week before we dive into some of the our predictions for the season?
Yeah. 3-3, a little disappointing. Three extra inning games. You know, opening day they put up 11 runs. All you heard was, oh, look at this new look lineup. They scored 12 runs in the last five games. And three of them were ghost runners. And today they go 11 innings, couldn't score either in the 10th or the 11th. Lindor's off to his typical slow start. Semien hits his first two times up against the Pirates on opening day, 0 for 18 cents. Polanco sent to 11. Robert in the series, 1 for 8. You know, 1 for 29 with runners in scoring position against the Cardinals. And they brought in these guys that are supposed to be magicians with runners in scoring position. I know it's only five games. Or three games in the series, but 1 for 29 with runners in scoring position. We could have done better.
I don't know about that, but it could have been exciting.
Could have done much worse.
Very true. Very true.
My only thing, Kev, is I hope this is just a normal Lindor slow start, and it's not repercussions from the hammy.
I'm chalking it up to his typical slow start.
And listen, I gave you the stats weeks ago. You know, 60% of those guys are fine from day one. The other 40, it takes them 30 to 60 days before they gain enough strength and power in their hands to be able to turn on balls like this. The only guy I can make the easy comparison to at the moment is Corbin Carroll, who completely seems to be fine.
Yeah.
He's blasting home runs all over the park. So,
yes,
you know,
I know that.
You know. That's the only comparison. So hopefully it's just a typical slow start and it's nothing else at this point.
Yeah. And I expect Bichette to bounce back. He's too good a hitter. I think he's probably pressing a little bit in the new environment. But, you know, Semien and Polanco and Robert, last week I was talking about them, you know, too many big ifs there. And, you know, Robert did have his one big moment winning the Pirate game with that 3-run home run. But otherwise, you know, slow starts for them. First base, you know, six games, we've already started Polanco and Beatty and Vientos and Young, because we have to get Young into this mix as well. You know, four different guys in six games of first base after watching. This is the only time we're going to bring it up. I've watched the same guy play first base every day for the last 7 years. I don't think we have four first basemen in the last 7 years. We have had four first basemen in the first six games.
Very true.
The starters, you don't expect much length from the starters the first time through. They've given you between 5 and 6, but with the 3 extra inning games, that taxes the bullpen already. And we've seen the great Dickie Lovelady 3 times already. Why is he on the team?
Because you need to see a pitcher for 3 times in 6 games, and he's the guy.
God.
It's early. It's only 6 games in.
I don't know, but I see a lot of the things that I was afraid of already.
Darren, you want to touch on the Yankees after 6 games?
Yeah, Yankees have been all about pitching. Everybody going into today until Duvall blew up a little bit today, except for Paul Blackburn. I don't want to hear your crap about Lovelady. I had to live with Paul freaking Blackburn. So you know what?
Screw I lived
you.
Through that too.
And you know what? Him and his 3 whip. And his, you know, and I don't know if it gets much better than that as the season goes on. But for some reason, he has pictures of somebody, and he gets to keep a major league job. But beside that, the pitching's been outstanding. I mean, you can't argue with Fried or Schlittler at all. They've been unbelievable. Bednar's been solid. I think he gave up a run today, but outside of that, he's been great. They're 5-1. They didn't give up anything against the Giants, hardly. The only game they lost was 2-1. I mean, you can't blame the pitching for anything. You know, I mean, Warren's been fine. Weathers was fine. I mean, everybody came out pretty good. Bird's been good out of the pen. Everything's been okay on this team. The big issue is going to be, you know, when the offense kind of gets going. Because right now, Giancarlo's giving his playoff Giancarlo in April, which you don't expect. You figure he'd be on the DL at this point, but here he is. He's 10 for 20 or whatever he is, something like that.
Yeah.
Ben Rice is off to a great start. You know, you have certain guys, you know, that those are the two guys really, you know, Bellinger's been fine. And, that, you know, Judge hasn't really started hitting yet. Chisholm's been awful. Wells has been awful. You know, McMahon's got one hit, I think, so far. I mean, so it's a bunch of guys that don't hit. But the reality is that, you know, the pitching has been so good, G, that it's really, really hard to argue with this team. Kev?
I was shocked when I saw that stat that this was the first time ever the Yankees started off with 2 straight shutouts.
Yeah, it was amazing, right?
With the great pitching the Yankees have had over the years, first time ever?
Yeah.
That was very surprising.
Usually the hitting is a little ahead of the pitching early on, but not like – I mean, the Yankees have been, you know, just shutting out the Giants. Again, I don't think the Giants' offense is fantastic, but nonetheless, they still got bats in that lineup with Adames and Devers and guys like that. Yeah. And the Yankees made them look like they had nothing, right? I mean, it was impressive. And picking up right where he left off, man. This kid looks like he's a star already.
They've given up 6 runs in 6 games. Very difficult to argue with that. The ERA's
up to a 1, which is much worse than it was after 3 games. We're only at 0.33, so I'm a little nervous. But, yeah, no, they've been great.
All right.
They gave up 3 today. That was the big deal.
All right, we'll start with our predictions for divisions. We'll start with the American League. We're going to start with the AL East. I'll go to Darren for the AL. We'll go to Kev to start NL. So, okay. Darren, AL East.
I think that the Yankees are the winner. They did absolutely nothing in the offseason. They did nothing to improve themselves in any way, shape, or form. And if their pitching is going to be as good as it looks right now, and with the arms coming back, and Cole not on the 60, but on the 15, there's a lot of things I like what I'm seeing. Not that I expect Cole to be Cole, but even a bad cold would be good enough to be a fourth starter on this team. I'm going to say the Yankees find a way to get through.
Kev?
Yeah, I think the reinforcements coming back is a big thing. I think the Blue Jays suffer a little bit of a World Series hangover, which seems to happen to the loser. I like the Yankees to win the division as well.
I agree. I also think the one issue Darren seems to have is the bullpen. I think at some point there'll be another arm that'll be in the bullpen. And I think at some point, Grichuk, whoever you want to say, it'll be down, he'll be gone. I think Dominguez will be up here. If Grisham is not hitting, I think he'll be splitting at bats with him. So I think they're one of the deeper teams right now. Pitching is amazing right now. I don't think that's going to keep the whole season, but they're playing so well right now. I got the Yankees. AL Central, Darren.
You know what? That pitching staff, despite the fact I don't like the offense on Detroit, it's really hard to argue with the top two, really three if you throw in Flaherty, really four if you throw in Mize. This is a really good staff. They upgraded the pen a little bit too. You know, you throw in Jansen to go along with Vest and the – you know, and you already had Finnegan and stuff. I just think the pitching is going to keep them in a lot of games. They lost today 1-0, which tells you everything you know about the offense. Was it Gallen outdueled Skubal today, or Skubal, as I like to say. But the simple fact of the matter is that I don't think Cleveland took a step forward. The Twins did nothing, and the White Sox are never going to be good. And I think the Royals have improved, but I don't think that anybody's going to be up to the Detroit's level.
Yeah, you've got the two bad, awful teams there. You've got, you know, like I said, Kansas City's going to make a little run. I don't know if they've got quite enough yet. This looks like Detroit with the pitching is just going to win this division. I mean, 88 wins is going to be enough to win this division.
I agree.
Maybe 86. So I like Detroit.
I like Detroit also. It's a clean sweep. I would like to see an offensive bat acquired for the middle of the lineup for this team.
Yep.
You know, and the one guy that actually could have made sense went to Pittsburgh, which is Marcelo Zuna. I would have loved the Zuna right in the middle of this lineup as the everyday DH, mentoring some of these younger hitters along, but I think it's Detroit.
Well, you don't think Kerry Carpenter is that scary bat in the middle of the – I'm just making sure.
Listen, him and Green and Torkelson are really good, Darren, but I just look like somebody
– I don't think they're really good. I think
you know what I mean?
McGonagall looked at the best hitter on the team, and he's a guy that we weren't even sure was going to make the team and start.
Darren, AL West.
Seattle's the popular pick. I'm taking Texas. Otherwise, we'd all be the same all the way through. No real reason behind it. I you know what? I kind of – the Nimmo for Simeon move to me is an upgrade for them. Andy McKenzie Gore out of nowhere I thought was a nice move for them. Jack Leiter. Tyler Alexander seems like he's got the closing job locked down, doing pretty good. Evaldi's a veteran. You know, Langford's off to a bad start, but I like him. I like Seager. I like Evan Carter play. I think they're going to have a little more offense than Seattle, and I think it's going to be really close, and I think Texas gets the division.
Kev?
Yeah, I went chalk. I went Seattle. I was looking at Texas also. I think so much of it still depends on DeGrom's health. You know, he's at ace, and he had the full season last year. It's the first time he's pitched that many innings since about 2019. I wonder if he's going to be able to bounce back this year with the same type of caliber as last year. I thought the funny thing with him and see, he gave up the first home run of the season to Pete Alonso.
Yep.
But yeah, I think Texas is going to fall a little short here. I think Seattle's going to win this division.
All right, well, we have three different ones for the first time, so that's good.
You want Houston?
I'm thinking Houston, yeah. Uh-huh. Alvarez is healthy, and he looks healthy. I watched a couple of his at-bats already. He looks healthy.
He's such a beast today. It reminds me of what he's a little bit.
Altuve still got something there. They're getting stuff from Diaz and Walker and Paredes. They always do. I think the difference is the starters. Along with Hunter Brown, I think Burrows is a big starter in the making. And although Imai did not pitch great the other night, he's going to be a pest the same way Imanaga was for the Cubs that this first the first season that he's out there. I like Houston here. So we got three different ones. Darren, first wild card.
First wild card for me is Seattle because I had them just losing to Texas. Okay. So that's my four seed is Seattle.
Actually, you know what? Why don't you give me all three of your wild cards?
Okay, I got Seattle as my four, Baltimore as my five, and Kansas City as my six.
Ooh, the Royals. Okay, Kev?
I have Toronto. I think they still are too good to not put into the playoffs. Gino, I agree with you with the Astros. I think they're still a really good team. I've got the Astros as my second wild card. And that third one, I came down there. I think the Red Sox, because of Crochet, is a difference maker. I think Red Sox get that third wild card.
All right, so I got Toronto, I got Seattle, and I got Baltimore. So we got kind of a mixture of teams. Darren, you know, I really wanted to pick Kansas City. I just think they are just a little short with starting pitching. I think they're one big starter away. If Reagans is going to be healthy all year, Cole Reagans, and they had a second guy right behind him, I think I would like them a lot more because I really looked at him. I really looked hard when I was looking at this. Darren?
I just think that Minnesota and Chicago being so bad and so many games against those teams give Kansas City a slight edge over the other American League East squads. Because to be honest with you, there's no weakness in the AL East. I mean, there is a weakness in the AL West, but we all think the A's have the offense to make it exciting. And if Trout's finding the fountain of youth for a few minutes anyway, it makes the Angels a little bit more fun to watch, right? They don't have real pitchers. Mariano's been good. So I think that the weakest division is the Central, and that's why I took the second-place team, just because I honestly, yes. Do I think Boston's a better team than Kansas City? Yes. I feel the same way about Toronto. I put Baltimore in there just because I like what Baltimore did in the offseason. But I just felt like the teams will beat each other up a little bit more, and that's the only reason why I went with the Royals. Okay. But it's easy to go with the other teams. I think complete. I agree with you, Gino. Complete squad 1-26. I like the way you had it.
And the one guy I'll point to real quick is if Framber Valdez would have signed with Kansas City and not Detroit, I think it makes a huge difference. Huge, because I think that's what he missed.
Well, I think Detroit knows they're losing school, right? So yeah. They had to have their new ace.
Oh, no, no.
They have Framber sitting there because they know they're not going to compete with school.
I'm just talking about that big star. That was, you know, that guy they really needed, you know? All right. AL Division, I have the Yankees and the Tigers. Darren?
Even though I didn't pick them to win the division, I had the Yankees and the Mariners.
Okay. Kev?
I'm going to go Yankees and Tigers. Pitching's just too much.
Yeah, I kind of think so, too.
I think the Mariners' pitching is just as good as the Tigers. Not on the top level, but it's so close the rest of the way.
They don't have Schuble.
But 2 through 4 might be theirs.
It's pretty darn close to even.
Yeah. Do we all think the Yankees are going to the World Series?
Yes.
I have Seattle.
Okay. All right. There's one difference. Okay.
And yet I don't have one in the division. You got to love that. Anyway.
That's all right. Hey, wild card. You can do anything right now. Kev, let's start it with the NL East.
Boy, if Zach Wheeler comes back, this rotation looks really good. I'm going to go with the Phillies to win this division.
I agree with you, Kev. I have Philly also.
And I go with Atlanta. I think if they get healthy and Acuña starts to hit, I think Atlanta, with that lineup will do a lot of damage. They always bother you. They're just annoying as hell. I think Atlanta finds a way to sneak through.
Okay. Kev's NL Central.
I don't think the Pirates are there yet. They don't have any offense. You know, despite, you know, what headed by Skeens, I mean, that's going to be fun to watch all year, even with the first game defense. O'Neill Cruz let them down big time in center field there. You know what? I hate to go chalk again, but I'm going to go Cubs.
Kev, we all know you're going chalk. You don't have to fake it. It's all right.
I think the Cubs are just a little bit more complete. I think their rotation is good. The lineup is good. I think that's good enough to win the Central Division.
I like the fact that Palencia settles their bullpen down immensely. I have the Cubs also, Kev.
Yep.
Darren?
Taking Terry Francona and the Reds.
Oh, you think, you think they're finally?
What?
You think they're finally going to get over the hump?
I have no idea why. You know what? I love the young line. I love the lineup. I like all the excitement in the players. I think Abbott's a real good pitcher. Do I think they have enough probably on the rotation? No, but Chase Burrs looked great in his first off. If he's anything close to that, I think it's really good. Pagan gives them the settling point in the closer role. I like Santin setting up. I kind of like the way the pen's coming together. The rotation's a little better than it was. Brady Singer's not great, but he's still solid enough, gives you innings. And I like their offense overall. It's a complete offense. I think it's less streaky than what the Cubs bring. So I'm going to take the Reds.
So I like the Reds also, and I have them in a wild card, but I wish Hunter Green was healthy to start the year right now. If he was there between him, Lodolo, and Burns, this could really be something really special. And you know Francona's going to have him playing. I mean, that's the other thing. He's not falling behind. All right, Kev, the truckiest pick of the truckiest truck picks of truck. The NL West.
Dodgers. Not even this question.
Yeah, I have the Dodgers. I don't know how we could pick anybody else. Darren, I'm assuming you have the Dodgers.
You take a Dodger team that was the best team last year, and you add Tucker and you add Diaz, and you say to yourself, what the hell am I going to do? It's the Dodgers. There's nobody else close to me.
All right, so we all picked the Dodgers, but here's the question to both of you. What would have to happen for the Dodgers not to win this division?
Shohei goes down. Despite all the other bats in the lineup, that's the guy that you're scared of. Freeman's older. Betts is getting older. I would go with Shohei.
As long as Shohei can bat, the pitching is just a bonus. They're deep enough from the rotation. They can survive if Shohei goes down.
I need him to tear a UCL.
Again,
I need him where he can't swing the bat and he can't pitch.
Listen, when I came up with this question this afternoon, that's basically the same thing I said, is that for me, there's only one way the Dodgers don't win this division, and that is if Ohtani misses 50-something games, then there's a question as to whether or not they win the division or not. But other than that, I can't see any other reason they don't win this division. All right, Kev, wild cards. Let's go. Come on.
All right, I'm going to go. Darren, I like Atlanta. You know, I like them. I like Philly beating them out, but I like Atlanta. I think Milwaukee, you know what? Even though they lost Peralta, they didn't make any huge additions, but Murphy gets them playing every year. He's a damn good manager, back-to-back manager of the year. I think Milwaukee finds a way in. And the third team, I'm going to go with the best bullpen in baseball, unless they wind up trading anybody. Who knows what's going to happen, but I'm going to take the Padres as my third wild card team.
You didn't pick the Mets for one of the wild cards?
No. I'm not sold on them.
All right.
I think last week I said their ceiling is 88 wins and maybe a wild card. And that's if they play well. I'm not down. I really don't like the offense.
All right. Darren, wild cards?
Well, I went with the Cubs. I think they'll finish second. My second wild card, fifth team, is the Mets. I have the Mets getting in, and my sixth team is the Philly. So I have two teams from that because, again, I think that Washington and Miami, though they're getting better, are still teams that these top three can beat. So I'm going to give two teams from the AL Central. You have my Padres in. I have your Mets in.
Yep.
You're just hoping the other one's right. There we go.
All right. So my wild cards are Atlanta, Cincinnati, and Arizona.
Arizona was like a last throwout for me, so I see that.
Yeah.
So we all have the Phillies, we all have Atlanta, we all have the Cubs, we all have the Dodgers. So basically, we have about two teams that were not the same on. NL Division Championship Series, Kev? Who is it?
Dodgers over Atlanta. I think Atlanta gets healthier as the season goes on. Dodgers, Atlanta.
Dude, that's sold on Chris Sale, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Darren?
I had the same one. I have Dodgers over the Braves.
Really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
I can change it just to be interesting, but I had Dodgers over the Braves.
I mean, you would not have guessed me picking the Braves in this.
I didn't expect you. I expected the Phillies more than the Braves. I know you hate them more, or at least as much.
Yeah.
And I have the Dodgers versus the Reds.
I wanted to put the Reds so badly. Just until I know about Hunter Green, I couldn't go that far. I was willing to stretch it because I believe in Francona so much, but, you know, I don't know.
All right, so I have the Yankees beating the Dodgers. Kevin?
I have the Dodgers beating the Yankees.
And I have the Darren? Dodgers beating the Mariners.
All right.
All right. So those are the picks for 2026.
I hope I'm wrong.
What?
I hope I'm wrong. I would love nothing more than to lose any bet I'd make on the Dodgers.
Before we move to over-unders, AL MVP?
Okay, I'm going to pick Judge, but my backup, because it's hard to pick Judge, is going to be Julio Rodriguez. Kevin is as well, so therefore we don't have to do anything.
Same thing. It was Judge and then Julio.
I'm going Judge and then Witt.
Okay.
Because I think the Royals are going to play a lot better, and I love the defenses are in a little bit, by the way. And we did the same thing last year.
Yeah.
NL MVP.
I got Ohtani with Ellie second.
I've got Ohtani with Acuna second.
And I have Ohtani with Ellie. That's why I picked the Reds to go to the World Series. I mean, for the Division Series.
Yeah, listen, maybe it's Matt McClain's resurgent.
AL Cy Young, Darren?
Crochet. I don't have him in the playoffs, but I think he's going to have a monster year.
Kev?
Back-to-back-to-back, Scooble. With Crochet second.
Yeah, I have Scooble also. Something going on with Scooble, man. If Detroit doesn't make a run, Detroit, I don't know what they're going to do with themselves, but they're going to have to do something. NL Cy Young.
Chris Sale.
He's going to pull one out of left field. He's going to get votes because voters get confused. Shohei Ohtani. Cy Young and MVP. How about that?
That'd be interesting.
That's it. That means he's having a hell of a season. Oh, my God. I'm going to say it's Skeens.
Okay.
AL Rookie of the Year?
Okamoto.
He's off to a hot start. Chase DeLauder.
That's a nice pick, Kev. I'm going to go with the other member of the Japanese crew. I'm going to go with Murakami.
Okay.
I have them in all three fantasy leagues, which were all before the season started. So just so that there's no confusion after his hot start. NL Rookie of the Year?
If he's up, I'd take Griffin. But I'm going to go with Weatherholt right now. He looks pretty impressive. And Griffin's not up yet. If Griffin comes up, I think he'll win it. But I'm going to go with Weatherholt.
I'm going to go with my Matt. I'm going to go with Nolan McClain.
So if I was betting, I would say it's McClain, but I'm going to go a little off the board. I'm going to go stick with the Cincinnati group. I'm going to say it's Sal Stewart.
He's actually one of the favorites in the NL right now, man.
All right. We've done the over-unders every year. We go in rotation. I flipped some coins. Kev, you won. So you start, Darren goes second. I actually go third, which I don't like, but that's what happens. We've picked the Yankees and Mets over unders and then five choices. So let's start the easy ones. The Yankees and Mets are both 90.5. Mm-hmm. So first off, Kev, Yankees?
Over.
Darren?
Over.
And I agree, over .90.5. Mets.
Well, if I've got them out of the playoffs, they're obviously going to be under 90.5.
Darren?
I have them under that as well. Not by a lot. I have them closer than Kev. I think they're like an 88-89 win team. So I'm going to go under.
I have them under also. I think they're 84 wins this year.
Okay.
Right? So we start the over-unders. We all have the list. Kev, I can't believe you won the damn coin toss, but you did. You have the board, sir.
All right. I'm going to leave a couple for you. I'm going to start, since I like them in the playoffs, I'm going to take the Brewers over 84.5. I think they're going to be in the upper 80s to get to the wild card.
Darren?
Just to be a prick, I'm taking the Reds over 80.5 because I know you're going to take it if I don't.
I was going to take it, and not only was I going to take it, but that was going to be the first one off the board for me.
It was either first or second for me, so I'm on the same boat.
Because of that, I'm going to go high. I'll take the Yankees over 90.5. I think they – oh, no, we can't take the Yankees. Excuse me. I apologize.
We already picked them.
I threw them all. Look at me. I got them all flustered.
You got flustered.
I will take Brady. I will take Houston over 85.5. Kev?
I'm going to take the Braves over 87.5. They're going to challenge 90 wins here.
I crossed that one off my list. I am going to take the Tigers over 85.5. If I think they're going to win the division, I think they're going to win more than 86 games. 86 or more, anyway.
All right. I'll start with an under. I'm taking the Giants under 82.5. I just don't think they're I don't think they're a good team at all. I think what they've already done, the moves they made don't work out so well. So I'm taking them as the under. Kev?
I personally think they're the fourth best in the stacked AL East. So I'm going to go Orioles under 85.5.
Ooh.
Darren? I think this team is the third best in the stacked AL East. So I'm going to take the Red Sox under 87.5.
Under 87.5. Okay. I'm going to take Arizona over 79.5. And now is where it gets interesting, as they say. Kev, pick number 4.
Yeah. I think they're going to finish second. I think they're just going to come up a little short. Kansas City over 82.5.
I'll cross.
Wait, Kansas City, what'd you say?
Over 82.5.
Okay. Darren?
I'm going to take the Padres over 83.5.
Nobody's gone against each other so far.
Well, wow. I'm going to soon. I'm deciding which one of you guys are going against. I want to get each one of you.
All right. Where do I want to go? I'm going to take the Marlins over 72.5.
I'll cross that one off.
Kev, last one.
I'm going to go Rangers under 83.5. I think they're a 500 team. They got to be just under 83.5.
Rangers under 83.5. Wow. Okay.
I'm going to go head-to-head with Gino. I'm taking the Astros under 85.5.
And I'm going head-to-head with Darren. I'm taking San Diego under the 83.5. I got something. I'm not sure about that team, Darren.
Me neither. I think they're going to finish 85-77. I'm going to finish 81-81. They're not a playoff team. Only Kevin thinks they are.
Okay, so those are all our picks. Mm-hmm. One change that baseball's had this year is they've implemented the ABS strike zone challenge, ball strike challenge. You guys have any thoughts about this, by the way?
At least it's quick.
Okay. Yeah, and the bad arms are getting exposed, man. Well, six and one game for what's his name? Why am I blanking?
CB Buckner.
Yeah. Six and one game.
Not only the ABS, but thank God we had the instant replay from last night.
Oh, he's horrible.
I forget who was running down the line. Clearly steps on the middle of first base. And C.B. Buckner, oh, he never stepped on it. He's out.
C.B. Buckner's horrible. Laz Diaz is not much better, but he's better.
Yeah. Well, somebody had to replace Angel as the worst umpire, so we know it's C.B.
I mean, listen, it's about time that the umpires are held a little bit more accountable. And we've all always known certain umpires are horrible. The ABS is quick, like you said. That's the only thing I could go with it. Gino, you like the technology usually more than Kevin and I. Your thoughts?
I like it. You know, two challenges. If you're successful, you keep your challenge. Do you think as we get closer down the stretch, some of these coaches start telling certain players, "Hey, I don't want you to challenge anything." You know, like right now, I think it's for the most part, I think it's just everybody is, you know, it's the Wild West, I think, right now. But as we start getting down the stretch and these games become more and more important, you know, I don't think you want to run out of your challenges until later innings. Kev?
I would never tell my maybe hold off a challenge, but I would not tell my catcher not to challenge.
Not the catcher. I'm really talking about a batter, Kev. I agree with you with the catcher, though.
But from the batter perspective, yeah, you got to get a sense for the first 2 or 3 months which batters you can trust to call the challenges. Every team will keep stats about it. So I think there will be some limitations on some batters. But, you know, like I said, overall, I think it's been a seamless transition so far going to this ABS.
And I will give you one added additional point that you guys probably don't think it's funny. Major League Baseball is learning the true height of a lot of these players. Some of them listed at 6'1 are now coming in at 5'10 and a half, because the vertical limits of the strike zone are at 53.5% of the batter's height, and the bottom is 27% of their height. So you're really getting an idea. I would be very curious, Kev, and not that I'm going to do this, but to compare everybody's baseball cards from this year to next year and see whose height really changed a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start. We have now started baseball season. We made all our picks, our over-unders. We'll give you some updates as the season goes along. Let's touch on some other sports going on right now.
And they affect baseball, so why don't I do those now?
Go ahead, Darren.
You got it, Darren.
First one's just it's a tough trivia, so I'll probably just end up reading it out. But Major League Baseball in the history, only 7 second basemen have hit cleanup in a World Series game, okay? Bichette being one of them last year. The other 6, I'll just rattle them off unless you guys want to make guesses. It's up to you.
Joe Morgan?
No.
Bill Mazeroski?
No.
Okay.
Frankie
Ron Frisch? Sandberg?
No Sandberg either. They didn't play in the World Series.
I know.
Frankie Frisch, Joe Gordon, Jackie Robinson, Frank White, Jim LaFave, Brandon Lowe, and Bo Bichette. It's interesting.
Brandon Lowe, wow.
Here's one that Kev might know. He probably does know this, but I didn't know it. So in college, Nolan McLean hit more home runs than Carson Bench, 36-25, while Carson Bench had more strikeouts, 79-76.
Yes.
Kev did know that, right?
Yeah, I saw that on the Met game, yep.
Only one pitcher has given up homers to all 3 Alou brothers. Ferguson Jenkins, 67 against the Jesus. 68 against Felipe, 71 against Matty.
I was going to say Carlton.
No, oh, I'm sorry. I jumped ahead. I'll give you a chance next time. Only one more baseball, and then there's a college basketball. Joey Votto was a freaking monster in high school. So his girlfriend dumps him in high school. Later that day, he goes 4-for-4 with 4 homers. And then just a college basketball one for you guys. Pistol Pete Maravich is 3 years at LSU. First season, 43.8 points a game, 7.5 rebounds a game, 4 assists a game. Remember, no 3-point line at this point, okay?
Yep.
His second season, 44.2 points a game, 6.5 rebounds a game, 4.9 assists a game.
Yeah.
Third, he actually went up in scoring again, 44.5 points a game, 5.3 rebounds a game, 6.2 assists a game. And he never played a March Madness.
Oh, my God.
He never made the tournament.
Wow. Yeah.
And I'm just saying, so the people with deprived of seeing Pistol Pete, we all know the legends. We never really saw him play.
Yep.
But those are my little buried treasures.
All right. Let's hit a couple of sports before we close this show out. Kev, we want to start. You want to start a little Islander hockey?
Yeah. As of tonight, or before the show started, they are still in third place in Metropolitan with 89 points. Columbus in the division right behind them with 88 with a game in hand. Philly, 86 with two games in hand. For the wild card, they are right now clear of the wild card spot. Boston is looking like the first wild card. The second wild card, you've got Ottawa and Detroit locked in there with 86 points each with two games in hand also.
Yep.
So if everybody wins out and picks up these games in hand and all the points that they have out there, Islanders will be out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
By a point. I mean, this is nail biting here.
Yeah, this is going to come down. This is going to come down the last couple of games here.
Yeah.
The cool thing is like nobody plays tonight, right? But Columbus plays at Carolina tomorrow. Carolina needs it to keep the one seed.
Yep.
Boston at Florida. Florida's hasn't been good, but whatever. Detroit plays Philly, two teams that are battling. You know, so
right.
It's nice to see that a little bit. Buffalo plays Ottawa. Buffalo's been excellent, even though they're at Ottawa. So there is a chance. Pittsburgh has to go to Tampa. Tampa's fighting for the one seed. So there is a chance that these games in hand kind of fall in place a little bit, but you need things to go right, and then they have to beat Philly on Friday after this tough two-game losing streak.
I was going to say the next two games – over the next week, they only play twice, Friday and Saturday, Philly and Carolina. So Philly is the must win. Carolina would be the nice to have win. You know, if they step up, you know, they beat Dallas 2-1 last week. So they can play up to that level. Pittsburgh was a killer. I mean, they were up 3-1 in the second, and the shorthanded goal by Pittsburgh and seven unanswered goals, 8-3. And they come out and lose to Buffalo 4-3. Last night, so a little tough there, but again, this is gonna be exciting down the stretch here.
Should be. Any other hockey points?
Not
all right. Kev, NBA.
Yeah, again, we'll just touch locally. The Knicks, you know, after their 7-game winning streak that I touched on last week, where the combined winning percentage was about 200. Well, they play Charlotte, Oklahoma City, and Houston on the road. They lost all three.
All three.
So they are they're sitting third. They're 2.5 back of Boston. A game up on Cleveland for fourth. Still far enough back to fifth. I mean, they're going to host the first round. At this point, it really depends if it's going to be as a 3 or a 4. I don't think they're going to catch Boston. And second round, if they both get through, would be at Boston.
Yep.
Anything else on the NBA?
Well, we had Jaden Ivey get cut by Chicago for making his comments that in this day and age you just can't make. You know, I know it's a religious thing, and I get it. It's also a guy that was in trouble for spousal abuse and all that other stuff. So I guess he found Jesus, doesn't want to, you know, be involved in the pride stuff. But, you know, it's a league-wide initiative. It's not up to you individually to an extent. And unfortunately for him, who was a kind of a bright young player, you know, you can't go up against the league and something like that, and it didn't work out for him, especially in a big city like Chicago.
Yep.
That's really it. I mean, you know, I hate LeBron, the Lakers, you know.
Hey, LeBron became the all-time winningest player.
Oh, of course.
Regular and postseason.
Yeah. I can't stress enough how much I hate the NBA.
Whoopsie damn do.
My only thing is two days ago, Oklahoma City became the first team to 60 this year. So,
exactly. A couple of quick horse racing points for you guys, and then we can wrap up. I talked about the races last week, Arkansas Derby, Renegade, strolling down the stretch, rolling with Rod Ortiz flying in. I forgot that Kev's got something else. My bad. You know, so beat Silent Tactic and Taptastic only in the second start. And the Florida Derby, Commandment comes down the stretch from way back to pass the Puma and Chief Wallaby in a great finish there. Again, we got three more stakes races this week, and then we'll have a real idea of who's going to be in the Derby, and we'll start breaking that down as we get closer to the race. Kevin, I believe there's South Carolina has been involved in some college women's basketball. Please tell us all about it. Gino's waited with bated breath.
Yes, they have. Gino, you can go and take your nap for the next 5 minutes. They do have 5 minutes, I believe. What's the rule?
Go ahead. Go for it.
You know, if you watched last year, the Final Four, and you saw UConn beat South Carolina and then UCLA and Texas both losing semis, guess what? You haven't missed anything the entire season this year because the same four teams are in the tournament again, or the Final Four again. The four teams combined, 143-7. Four of those losses were to each other. The worst loss of any of them was South Carolina losing at number 16, Oklahoma. That's the worst loss of any of them. Every week, the top 25 poll, these four were the top four in some order.
Were there any close games in the Elite Eight, Kev?
The Elite Eight. For these four teams, the closest game was UCLA beating Duke by 12.
That's why I said it.
You're giving me so many reasons to keep watching. Go ahead, continue, please.
That's why I said it.
Well, the Duke women was probably had the best game of the women's tournament as well. They beat LSU on a buzzer beater 3. This was a shot buzzer beater. Girl takes a shot, hits the rim, rolls around the rim about 3 times before dropping in, and knocks out Kim Mulkey and LSU.
Gino was watching. He doesn't need you to explain it.
So we're setting up. Yes. So we've got the semifinals set up. We've got UConn and South Carolina as a rematch from last year's national championship game. UConn with the defense and depth. South Carolina, not as deep as last year, but they do have Joyce Edwards. She scored the most points, averaged the most points this year since Asia Wilson in 2018 for South Carolina. So, you know, a little different than what South Carolina has been the last couple of years.
Tell us what we don't know. Come on.
But I think UConn's a little too strong. I think UConn knocks off South Carolina here.
I'm sorry, Kev. I'm hoping you win.
The other matchup, Texas and UCLA. Texas beat UCLA to give UCLA their only loss. We know about 6'7" senior Lauren Betts. She's a beast down there. And she plays under the basket, 70% shooting. But Texas has some big girls on the front court as well. They've got Madison Booker. I think Texas knocks off UCLA, and I'm going to go for the upset here. I'm going to take Texas with enough pressure defense to knock off UConn in the championship game.
Jay, who do you got?
Wow. I think it's a hell of a prediction.
Hey, listen, the reality is that the Final Four should be good. There's no parity in this sport yet.
These are the four. They're four evenly matched teams. These are the four best, clearly.
Yeah, I mean, UCLA is good, but they're probably a half a step below with the guard play from the other three, from what I've seen. I don't watch enough. Texas looked great against Michigan, and I saw parts of it. I was like, oh, my God, yep. They were just running away with it. But that's the thing. Final eight games where there's nothing exciting going on, that just tells you where the sport is right now.
Yeah.
Also, I heard a rant from Gino Auriemma last week about what they do to these poor girls and how they set up and, you know, when their practice time is and why they have to come to the arena like 7 hours before their practice time. And, you know, they got to – if they want – and he says he ran off shooting percentages. I don't know if you saw this, Kev. Three-point shooting percentage. He goes, and, you know, no, who's going to fill an arena to watch us when we all shoot like this? He goes, but, you know, they don't put us in a position to be better. Whoever's in charge should be talking to coaches and players about how to make the tournament better. So maybe – I mean, he's an outspoken guy, always has been.
Yep.
Maybe he gets the women's sport a little bit more righted. Yeah, Kev?
Part of the problem, the men's four separate distinct regions. Women have four regions, but two of them share once you get to the regional, the Sweet 16 Elite Eight. So yep. Sacramento 1, Sacramento 2.
It's stupid.
At one place Friday, Sunday, the other one plays Saturday, Monday, and that limits your practice time and court availability. So Gino does have a point there.
Gino gets upset about it.
Yeah, Gino gets very upset about it.
Gino Auriemma and Mignano both get upset about the same topic. They lose their minds.
Always.
But no. Hey, listen, I'll root for South Carolina. I have no dog in the fight, so I'll root for you.
Thank you.
G, anything else, pal?
I'm rooting for South Carolina also.
And thank you, G.
As good as anybody.
And I will have my 1 minute next week for the recap.
Can't wait. 2 minutes. He's going to give you 2 minutes.
Two? Wow.
Gino spoiling you rotten.
I took less than five today, so I have an extra minute.
You banked a couple of minutes for next week. Okay.
I reclaim my time next week.
Very good, Kev. I think that's it, Darren.
All right. I'll wrap it up, boys. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I can't even speak. Darren here with Kevin here with Gino talking about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where three geniuses came up with all the same picks pretty much throughout baseball and college basketball. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like, or Apple products, however you like it. We're putting a lot on social. You'll see a lot more going forward. Please like our stuff. Please share our stuff. If you don't like it, lie. Share it anyway. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.